stuff is very interesting. It's been around for quite some time. The brain's much more complicated than that, but there are specializations that occur left side, right side, and they agree on this at some point. You know, so dominantly we have our language comprehension. The trees are on the left side, and dominantly our spatial comprehension and emotional comprehension is on the right side. But they could swap over, and if you remove one hemisphere, they may well all jump over to the other side. So there's an agreement between the brainwaves. So depending on what your strengths are, and what what sort of anchors you have out in your neural functioning, you can train to the right to improve those functions, or you can train to the left to improve those functions or reduce their abilities. For example, with a topical thing is Asperger's, you know, where people, you know, they only see the trees, they don't get the joke, but they don't get the nuance, they don't get what's going on in your eyes, in your windows to the soul, they don't see that. They don't understand why you cry. They're too linear in their approach. Well, you actually train over here, and all the empathy circuits open up, the eyes to the world open up, and they become more social and socially conscious. You know, so you can train the right side up if you need to. Other people are, say, with depression, they have a left side deficit. Tends to be a left side deficit, so you need to train that up, you know, so that you're more approached than avoidant in your setting in a relationship. So left side, right side is great stuff. You know, it's much more complicated than that, how they work. But yes, we can by encouraging. Right side training, you often get a calming, you get a settling effect, so you're more present, you're less reactive, less impulsive, so you can linger a while in that mindful state, you know, that people speak of. You can be there a bit better, and your anxiety can drop. Now, no one thinks well when they're highly anxious. Mm. None of us do. You know, you can't even find your car keys when you're in a hurry, let alone take on important matters in your life. So we do need to be able to move into a calm state to stop and think.
Right.
Is that helpful?
Well, that's very helpful, because I'm just thinking now of all those different scenarios where if you're in negotiations in a business deal, if you're considering whether to get into a business or not, and then if there are too many external stimuli, like you say, you cannot filter out, you're not going to make good decisions. Or if people who like to trade, as in foreign exchange, or any sort of high-stress activity where a lot of money is involved, that they can make decisions based on what they see on a chart, rather than saying, oh my God, if this falls down, I'm going to be $10,000 down, right? Mm. Mm. And like you say, that's the compulsive component that you in your practice will help the client identify and say, look, you need to be a bit more self-aware in this particular area, as in what is pushing your buttons to do what you do, even though you know that the outcome is going to be less than helpful to you. So can you tell us how people can get in touch with you if they say, look, maybe this is the missing link in terms of my behaviors and my results, even though that's part of me that says I want to be successful, but I keep doing all this stupid stuff.
Okay. Well, my Skype name is John Hegg, so you can find me.
J-O-N-H-E-G-G, yeah?
Yes. When the website is up, that's about, I think it's a couple of weeks away yet, the Brain Training Center. .com.au will be another a way to reach me.
And also, you've got an email address?
Yes, it's johnhegg@bigpond.com, or my business, which is braintraining at tpg.com.au.
Okay.
Braintraining
Brain
TPG.
training, yep, at tpg.com.au, and people can find you there. Because what you're doing is actually non-invasive, right? There aren't any needles.
Oh, no.
You don't stick needles into people, yes?
No. Now, this is a powerful technology. This is not for children, and it's not for people to play willy-nilly with. You do have to have a lot of training in this to do it well. But this is the safest thing I've ever seen. I don't know a medication that has a safety track record that we have, because it's a learning model. It's like teaching someone to count to 10. How can they hurt themselves doing that? It's about the same. But if you're asking people to do something inappropriate, you know, like jump off high buildings, they're not going to have a great career. No, what you train is important, but it's safe because it's non-invasive. It's a learning-based model. Now, there are zap technologies out there. Well, I like to call them zap technologies. The doctors like this because the doctors like to be able to impact a system. So they use transcranial direct stimulation methods or magnetic stimulation methods. It's like a tiny, tiny form of ECT, you know, one flew over the cuckoo's nest, brain zapping. But this is a tiny, tiny, tiny signal, so they are safe. But they entrain the brain or set the brain up for a certain state of regulation. But, and that's helpful, they're showing some good results. But the learning model, that is what you actually practice, that you own. Because once you learn that, your brain can repeat that anytime it chooses or anytime you need it to. If I can go back to the exchange traders, et cetera. Now, I know these people well and have helped a number of them. It's all manner of defense systems go in there. Denial, drinking drugs, antidepressants, beta blockers. They take all kinds of things to try to reduce the heat and tempo of what's going on. All of them fail them at some point or another. The successful traders are steady minded. They can respond to their errors, just like a good golfer can. You know, if you just stay angry, you're going to make another mistake in your next swing. You know, so it's the same with the traders. There's no difference in kind. It's not the activity that changes. It's how you are with it. That's the universal. All right. So if you're able to be reflect on what you've done. Don't go into freezing situations, which is a common thing, where you just freeze up and do nothing. Well, boy, can things go badly for you then, you know. Or if you're impulsive, you jump out of a trade too early or whatever. You know, you can do yourself harm that way with a perfectly good idea. You can lose.
Yeah, and so that's where the self-sabotage comes in. Yeah, but you're saying you're saying it's trainable, and people have come to you with that particular problem, if you want to call it that, or challenge.
There are signatures of the brain that show this behavior. We can actually see this in the wave patterns. So you can see the tendency towards impulsivity, the tendency towards over-arousal or under-arousal. That is, you don't get enough juice going. You know, so we can see this in the brain waves and train them to more optimal states with care and practice. You can do this.
Okay, so when you do that, do you sort of have to listen to their story, inverted commas, as in, I grew up in a household that just fought over money, and therefore I have this problem with having a lot of money, or does it not matter to the point where, come on, that's a story, this is how we can help you, so just shut up, sit down, put on the electrodes.
Yeah, my beloved colleagues have all different perspectives on this. There are those that are highly technical, and they say, no, you don't have to. The story doesn't matter. It's just a reflection of what's occurring in the brain. Others that are more psychotherapy oriented see the genesis of ideas creating behaviors. I myself kind of wiggle in the middle a bit because, yes, there's a genetic valency towards things, and there's experiential traumas or set points that are created through experience that will affect that. But also, your story reflects in its own way that pattern. So it has its importance, because at some point or another, you have to perceive yourself and the world around you differently to change. You can't otherwise. So I think both things are true. And in my practice, I think the better neurofeedback people have a therapy background. They take the importance of the story as well, and that's kind of in alongside with and by the neurofeedback training. So it's kind of one system rather than coming at the brain or coming at the story. I think the two unite very well, because when you see brainwave patterns, you're not seeing brainwave patterns alone. You are seeing the person. That is their electrical energy expression of themselves. Okay, it's hard to translate wiggly lines into personality, but in a sense, you can. If you can look deeply enough into an EEG, you can see the uniqueness of individuals.
Wow. You know,
it is a wonderful thing. It is a wonderful thing.
It's like a thumbprint. It's unique to you. But
it's very much a fingerprint, yes.
But malleable, by what you're saying, that we can modulate the brainwave patterns. I've just got a question here, again, from the chat room. It says, does the military, whether you want to answer this or not, does the military use this technology at all?
Oh, yes, they do, particularly in traumatic brain injury and PTSD. So it's
post-traumatic stress.
Yes, post-traumatic stress disorder. Thank you. Yeah. You know, this is my own language, so I just speak it as everybody knows this stuff. But no, I met the head of the American Army Medical School. They are the biggest. They have T-shirts with tanks on it saying, "Our medical school is bigger than yours." You know, these guys are really well-funded. And he gave a speech in Denver, and he talked about the problems in say, the Vietnam War, where they lost over 50,000 boys killed. They lost 150,000 after the war to suicide, PTSD, or violent death. And they did an analysis of those 150,000 soldiers, and they found two things. One, the undiagnosed brain injury, blast injuries, common, and the other is PTSD, right? So the brain gets in a fear state and it locks in, right? For example, I had a patient with PTSD, and he told me this story. He was in a coffee shop and a car backfired out the front. Well, as he was diving to the, he said, you know, as I was diving to the floor, frothing at the mouth in a total panic attack, he knew it was a car that backfired. So this part of his brain said, "That's a car backfiring, Walter. What do you?" But the rest of him was in NAM. Down he went, right? And it took 20 minutes for him to come out of that, and it made a bit of a mess in the coffee shop. Now, this is an example of the things that can, the neuroplasticity going wrong, that is, it adapts, but not healthily. So neuroplasticity, that famous word now, has its positive and negative. So the head of the medical school was very, very clear that the U.S. Army is now taking this stuff seriously, and they have battlefield-ready QEG, brain mapping machines, computers that can take everything but a direct bullet. So what they're going to do is be able to assess who's been hurt. Say if a blast injury in Iraq, say if you're blown out of a Humpy, they can put a cap on them and decide who's got likely traumatic brain injury and who's got the likelihood of PTSD. That's their thing. So they put which plane you go on depends on those findings, and early intervention is the key to a lot of these things. So they're very serious. Now, that's one of the biggest medical schools in the world. And many of the treatment programs they have scattered around America are using EEG biofeedback and biofeedback technologies to help these soldiers through. And we're showing very good results. So it won't be too long down the track that this will be common. It won't be an outlier, edgy therapy. It'll be mainstream.
Okay, so it will become more acceptable by the general public, and it's not something to be viewed with suspicion. You know, I mean, I think people have this idea that you talked about shock therapy, and in the 50s it was pretty horrendous. Yeah, you know, you might as well be pulling your nails out. So here now, let's talk about the present, where we can. Basically, what you're doing is helping people perform at the peak of whatever it is that they say they seem to be challenged by. If it can be a study, what do you call it, the ability to study for a child and concentrate. It can be depression. It can be, like you say, you know, PTSD. But primarily for this purpose of the show, it is about changing our brainwave patterns that support our business ventures. Yes.
In a sense, there's no difference between a test pilot, a golfer trying to sink a putt at the U.S. Masters, and somebody making a business decision. They're all the same thing. They're just different arenas. What you need to be able to do in each and every one of those situations is when you need to be aware, you need to be ready, you need to go. But when you're going to press the button, when you're going to make the decision, you have to calm. You have to reach a more global state. Is this what I want to do? Is this the right move? And you're not going to answer that question correctly if you're buzzing, if you're running on fear or you're running on doubt or you're running on some past trauma. You are not going to make a wise decision. Your big brain needs to settle. Yes, you do a lot of work. There's no shortage of that. And then you have to work through decisions. But in order to make a correct one, just like a test pilot, just like a good putter, you need to be able to drop into a nice, regulated state of stillness and then act, you know. So this is the universal phenomena. I don't care what the arena is. That's the ability you need, and you may need that many, many times because a lot of micro decisions go on as well as macro decisions.
Okay, so. And also it sort of brings it back to the fact about meditation. I know a lot of people roll their eyes and think, come on, this Eastern stuff. You are saying, and in fact, it sounds like you slip into that particular state, and it is in the meditative state where there is clarity, where you're centered and, you know, you're not, no sweaty palms, your heart isn't racing, and you get that focus that you otherwise won't get.
Yes.
And you're saying that using neurofeedback, you can actually train yourself and at a drop of a hat, call up when you need that to be in that state at your will.
Okay. Now, I'm not going to argue that neurofeedback is better than meditation. I think it's broader. Most people meditate, they only reach alpha. It's only the yogis and the deeper spiritualists that go into the really, really low brainwave states where they're still conscious, where we'd be asleep. You know, they can go into really slow states, global awareness states, and stick skewers through their tongue and not even show a sign of reaction. You know, I'd be screaming. But most people, when they do meditation, they only reach alpha, which is a nice state. It's a nice state to be in. And a good practice of that is excellent. But I know people, when they're over-aroused, they won't achieve that at all. They won't achieve that at all. One of my cats has come to visit. And so meditation is an important thing. Mindfulness, these are points of stillness. You need to be able to create them. I don't care how you do that. Whether you blow smoke to the north or you chant or you ring bells or you meditate, as long as you can achieve that state, you will do better. Now, with the neurofeedback, I think we have a slightly broader range. Well, maybe not slightly. We have a broader range where we can regulate. Over-aroused people will not be able to achieve a reasonable state of meditation. under aroused people probably shouldn't. No.
But with neurofeedback, you can enter, you can call up that state at will in the moment.
Yes, because it's learned. The interesting thing about, if I go back a little bit, what brainwaves are, they are neurons in an organized state. They're a bound state. So they get together as a group and decide, we're going to do this. And those electric oscillations that they produce is the brain doing its thing. It's memory, thought, referring everything to the remembered present, what you expect. Expectation is the key that you're talking about with this mindfulness idea around wealth. What we expect is set in our minds as a background. Now, that is controlled through the oscillations of the brainwaves. Now, that's the cool thing. So that you can actually come back and start to change some of the fabric, just as you do with psychotherapy and cognitive behavior therapy and all of these methods all do that, some better than others. And for whom is the question? Now, I like people to do an assessment of their brain so that they choose the methodology that's most likely to work rather than try to maybe work it out higgledy-piggledy, follow this method or that method or what. You can go around your whole life doing that. But once you decide this is the sort of thing I need to get towards a more optimal state, then you can pursue that course of action, be it neurotherapy, be it mentoring and coaching, these sort of things. I think you'll get better bang for your buck if you know what your brain needs, where its stuck points are, where its advantages are, where its strengths are,
That's pretty amazing. So if people who are not in Australia want to get in touch with you and use your services in this therapy or ability to just overcome themselves, they can do it via Skype. Do they need to be with you to do this?
It's a bit complicated in terms of because you need equipment and you need a bit of training. It's probably not at this stage something that you could do. I would be comfortable in doing globally, training someone in Botswana while I'm sitting here in Curtin. We'll get to that, and there are people that will do that. But you need to get a proper assessment first, so you have to visit somebody that does that. Now, I can direct people to, who they should be seeing, because I'm on the board of examiners here in Australia. I'm on the national organization, and I'm also on some international committees as well. So I know who's who, and I can find out who would know who's who in the local area that the person needs help from. Okay,
and after that, they can actually approach you directly because they can identify and basically what you've said resonates with them, that you can help them in this particular area. And for all you know, tell me, if one area of a person's life improves markedly, it goes without saying that other aspects will improve too, in terms of, let's say, if it's their depression, etc., their relationships with other people get better, their chances of getting a better job get better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the way it works. Most of our things, it's like you're a stage actor and you're performing in New York and then you're performing in San Francisco. Then you're over into Denver and then you're in San Antonio, Texas. And then you're off to Edmond, Alberta. These are all different stages. You're the same actor, but you have a different stage. So in one stage, you might be focusing on business decisions. Another stage, you might be focusing on your family, right? Say those are the different audiences that you're performing to. So it matters little in that sense that you are able to act your best, right? So the rollouts can be many, many, many in different forms. So it's not the forms that matter so much as your principled state of being. Are you spontaneous? Are you aware? Are you present? Are you able to respond creatively or at least adequately to a situation?
Appropriately. And appropriately for some people. Well, look, this has been a fascinating hour talking to you. And I mean, I could talk to you for another couple of hours about this, because it's it basically is the basis when you think about our brains. We think of our brains as being smart decision-making mechanisms in our head, and our neurons firing, etc. When in fact, you're saying we, the person, has a conscious person, has the ability to modulate, control, and call up at will the different states that we want, rather than be driven by the states that seem to just pop up and cause grief in our lives. So that is so heartening and so inspiring to hear that. So once again, folks, if you want to get in touch with John at the direct, he's the clinical director of the Brain Training Center in Canberra. You don't have to be there. Just get him on Skype. It is J-O-N-H-E-G-G. Just to say hello, good day, and perhaps, you know, can you help me with a particular aspect that I'm kind of feeling challenged with? And if it's money, so be it. If it's your business, so be it. If it's your relationships, etc., or somebody you know who could probably need, could do with some help here, go for it. So on behalf of your money and your mindset, John Haig, thank you very much for spending this hour with us, and God bless, and hope you have a good day.
Thank you. Okay, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Obesity Hotline.